Welcome to the Pearls of Wisdom podcast, where we mix business, law of attraction, spirituality, and well-being with great guests and phenomenal stories. You'll hear hints, tips, and up-to-the-minute information on digital communication from an expert in her field. Pearl has some wonderful individuals in her networks, and she will be interviewing them all at some point in the future. Enjoy your listening.
Right. Well, hello and welcome to another of the Pearls of Wisdom podcast. Now, all of my listeners that have been following me, we've been quite quiet for a while, and I'm starting the podcast up again with a very special episode. People that I've known for a while, some I've only just met, but one of these people, one of my guests, I've known for quite a few years. We've worked together. And when he did a post on LinkedIn, I thought, right, I'm going to reach out and see where I can help. And from that, this is how this panel episode has come together. We're going to be talking about the MDS charity. Now, there's quite a lot. I've never heard of it before. So what I'm going to do, without further ado, I'm going to jump in and I'm going to ask Debbie first. Debbie, could you give us a bit of background and tell us what the MDS charity stands for, please?
Yeah. So MDS stands for myelodysplastic syndrome, or sometimes myelodysplastic syndromes with an S on the end. Myelodysplastic syndrome is a form of blood cancer. It is rare. At the moment, they kind of estimate that about 7,000 people, between maybe 15,000 7,000-15,000 people in the UK are living with myelodysplastic syndrome, but some people have it and don't know that they have it, because you may have it but not actually have any symptoms. So it's basically bone marrow failure. So in our bone marrow, which is the kind of spongy substance that's inside some of our bigger bones, like our thigh bones and our sternum and our pelvic bones, that's where we store our bone marrow, and the bone marrow is where blood cells are produced. And blood cells they're sort of produced as initially like immature blood cells, are called blast cells, and they're produced by the bone marrow, and then in healthy people they mature into normal blood cells. So normally you've got kind of three types of blood cells. That's hemoglobin, are your red blood cells, and they carry oxygen around the body into the major organs. And you've got white blood cells, and they help to fight infection. There's different types of white blood cells for different types of infection. And then the third type is platelets, and platelets help your blood to clot. So with people who have bone marrow failure, often what happens is those blast cells, those immature blood cells, don't always mature correctly. So what happens is then they stay as immature cells and they start to kind of clog up the bone marrow. And so myelo stands for blood cell. Dysplastic, or dysplasia, stands for faulty. So myelodysplastic, that's sort of where that comes from. And they call it syndrome because it is a big kind of spectrum with myelodysplastic syndrome. Some people get it when they're diagnosed, they have it at a very low level and it's very slow to develop, and they often don't even have symptoms, and they may not have symptoms for years. But you can get it at an intermediate level, so you're starting to recognize that you've got symptoms. So you might start to be fatigued. You might be getting a bit breathless, and you might be prone to infection. And then at high risk, you are seriously fatigued and you're very aware that you've got something wrong. And so often it's at that point, you know, intermediate to high level, where people are really noticing the symptoms. That's when they go to their doctors. And because it's such a rare disease, not all GPs have come across it. So this is what MDS UK patient support group, that's the charity that I am representing. And what we do, apart from supporting people who've got myelodysplastic syndrome, or MDS. And also we support people with CMML, which is a form of leukemia, but it has very similar symptoms to MDS. So we support those people as well. So apart from supporting them, signposting them to different services, we also try to raise awareness of the disease. And so to get it on the radar of GPs, so that when people present to them with those kind of symptoms, it might just put up a red flag and they can send people off to be tested. So there you are, in a nutshell.
That is wonderful. And thank you for giving us such a detailed background, because I think this is so rare. Not many people will have heard about it.
No.
At all. And I'm going to ask Pete now. Now, you're going to see from and hear from this podcast, we've got a father and son on this call. And it's Pete. Now, Pete, we've heard how Debbie has shared certain bits about what to look for. How did you come about this? What was it that sort of drew you to actually having that diagnosis?
Well, I think, as Debbie said, it's a very rare disease. So for me, it turned up on a blood test, a routine blood test, a blood test that I probably have once a year. And they said, your white blood cell count is very low. And at the time, I just lost my mother. I'd lost my mother-in-law. Busy job. And to be quite honest, I thought maybe I'm just a bit run down, to be fair. And the GP said to me, oh, we'd like you to have a bone marrow biopsy. Now, to be quite honest, I was outside the gym at the time, in the car, waiting to go. I'd done my workout before work. And I was thinking, this can't be right. I'm absolutely fine. And had my wife not been in the car that day, I'd have probably said, no, I'm fine. Yeah. And but my wife Rose said, look, you know, you should do this. And I went the day after my mother's funeral. I went and had a bone marrow biopsy and really thought nothing of it. I just thought, I'm absolutely fine. And nothing happened until May. I think literally it was a long time. And I chased up about it. I just said, look, I had this procedure back on the 7th of February. What's going on? And I spoke to the haematologist and he said, look, there's nothing to worry about. You probably run down. He goes, oh, it's funny. Your results have just popped in. He goes, the only thing we're worried about is MDS, but you know, you seem fit and healthy. You're not likely to have anything. And then he went, oh, seems that you've tested positive for this. And of course, one of the things as a civil servant, I'm used to like drafting and reading and things. Literally, I'm Googling this thing as the guy's talking to me, and I'm looking at this. And I think this is where the charity really is relevant. Because you Google MDS, low risk, you Google anything, it comes up with a life expectancy chart.
Yeah.
And literally it says you've probably got 5 years, maybe if you're lucky, kind of thing. And I'm reading this and I'm going back to the haematologist at the same time. And I'm asking about chromosome. What is my missing chromosome? Literally, because I'm reading papers as I'm talking to him. And it was clear that he said, look, I'm going to refer to King's. So I go off to King's and King's confirm it. So I think, and that's when I get a leaflet. I get a leaflet for the MDS Patient Support Network. And I think, I'm at this point now where I've gone through a bit of anger and denial, to be fair. I think that was August, so a biopsy in February, blood test in Jan, biopsy in February, first diagnosis May, confirmation in August. So I'm at this point going, well, you know, I don't know what to do here. And I get this leaflet and I think I'll put that to one side. But then I get in touch with the group and I go to a meeting, and I meet, as Debbie said, I meet people that are actually still alive with the symptoms that I've, you know, like with the diagnosis that I've got, and they've been walking around for 10 years. I mean, they're having some, you know, some people are having treatment, but it is a source of hope of meeting real people who have got your symptoms or your diagnosis. And it all behaves very differently. So you realize, oh, actually, this is quite unique. And maybe there is some hope. Maybe I don't have to worry about this Google paper that's really in front of me. So I think, to be quite honest, it was the charity really helpful in that meeting. And it did took me another probably 4 or 5 months before I went on the Facebook group. But I think the point about where MDS UK patient support group, it's about hope. Because quite frankly, at that moment, when I looked at all that Google stuff, I was pretty low. But the group really does give you that hope. So there you go. That's my how I got diagnosed story, Pearl.
But this is what I want everyone to hear, and this is why I want it on the podcast, because how many of us will be given something that will be a life-changing moment or something, and it's how you deal with it. And to set how you've talked through what you've done, and as we're coming in later to see just what your son Joe is doing to really raise awareness for this as well. There's so much, it's inspiring to know.
The thing is here, Pearl, is that Joe's really instrumental in like how I've tackled this. Because I came across this quote, this Confucius quote, and it says, everyone has two lives, but the second one only begins when you realize you have one, right?
Wow.
So, and what that means is that technically we kind of go around and get obsessed with routine tasks. It's kind of work, eat, sleep, repeat, kind of what we do. And often you can forget that actually there are things that you really need to be grateful for and really things that you need to tackle. And I think it, Joe, you might correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think it was, you came up, you visited me after, I think I had the diagnosis. I think you and Miller came round, and I was saying that in 6 months I was planning to retire. And Joe said to me, well, you're done, aren't you? Surely? You know, like, shouldn't you be out there and doing stuff rather than knowing what you know? You don't know how long you've got, Dad. You know, like, why aren't you doing stuff? And it took me a weekend of reflection to realise this is, I'm just literally in eat, sleep, work, eat, sleep, repeat. I'm literally just conditioned to that. And I've been doing that for 40 odd years. So it took Joe to kind of get me to realise, actually, there's something here. So that really was what made me kind of think, well, actually, start reevaluating right now. You know, second life has begun, as Confucius would say.
Would you like to add to that, Joe? Because it's just this fantastic words of wisdom, unless it's pearls of wisdom. So what is it? What brought you to say that to your dad?
Yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, I hope this will come out, is that there's a really nice, I think, like synergy between the way me and my dad think. I think, you know, the reason you end up doing something like trying to run 100 miles is obviously you have the right influences around you. Now, yeah, I suppose for dad, that's a turning point where I said, Dad, this is retire. It's time to go. But there's plenty of times where people hear that kind of advice and they say, yeah, I should. And they turn up and work in the civil service on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday. And if you've got 40 years of service, of course you're going to do that.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, pearls of wisdom, I guess my point is pearls of wisdom are great, but sometimes you need to be the person to act on them.
Yeah.
And for me, that was a really proud moment when Dad decided he took in one step, closed the door, not in the way that he would have wanted to on his career at the civil service, but closed the door, flipped the page and said, okay, what now? And I think for me, that was a moment. It was that action. That's what I'm talking about, the synergy. I might have said it, but it's the next action that then inspires me to go off and do other things. Now, what we haven't mentioned is that what immediately followed that was within a week, I decided in the gym that we should jump out of a plane and do a skydive. And again, it's one of those things where I threw it out and Dad agreed, and then I couldn't back out. So for some reason or another, me and Dad, the September, was it what, a month, just a month after, ended up 15,000 feet in the air, praying for our lives and jumping out of a plane. So it's like I said, there's a really nice borderline strange synergy that we have that I think comes out in a nice way and inspires us to do more and ask more of ourselves. And I think it's, for me, it's really refreshing because that challenges me to do stuff as well.
And this is what's so special. I think anyone listening to this and anyone that knows any of the people that are on this podcast, you will know just how passionate they are and how they will go out to help others and put that awareness. And I think that's how everyone gets on in life. The people that just keep it to themselves and don't want to share and just go inwards. Yes, some people deal with that, but then no one can help them. Whereas if you go out and you share, like you've done, Pete, and like Joe, what you've done to support your dad, and I'm sure, Debbie, you have a lot of this within the charity where you've got the support networks, that you've got all this, and it's seeing certain people. And I'm hoping that anyone listening to this or watching as the video, no matter what they're going through in life, you're going to see how people have approached life-changing events. And it's been for the positive. And I think if everyone can think like that, it makes things slightly easier. And it makes you realise you're not on your own. And I think having that, I think that really is a massive, massive thing to be aware of. Mm. So I know, like you've said, you've touched on bits, Pete, but when it impacted the family, we've heard sort of how Jeremy's coping, but how do you do this as a family? Because as you're saying this, I'm thinking, I'm putting myself in Joe's shoes and how would I react? So how did the family actually come to terms with this? Is this something that the charity helps with, or is it more because I know each of you in your unit and you're phenomenal. The things that you achieve, you're a phenomenal team anyway.
Well, honestly, I think I'm thinking about this as I go, Pearl, so I'm trying to make it as eloquent as I can. I think, of course, you're going to get upset. We all got upset. You know, like I think that a lot of the things that you get upset about are the things that you think you're not going to be able to do, yeah, or that you're going to miss out on. And I think it took a while. Because this is not an overnight thing. It's, I think of, will I see my grandchildren? You know, like, will I do that? Will they know me like my dad knew Joe? Will they, you know, like things like that. And I think I'm very lucky that I'm surrounded by great people. You know, my wife's a rock. My son's a rock. My daughter's a rock. I've got like my brother. My whole family, my nephews, everybody around me literally are there for me. And of course, there were tears and everything kind of, I think, literally, again, this is where MDS UK, I had to like explain it. I had to explain it, you know, like, and when you walk out of your conversation with your oncologist or hematologist, there's a lot of things like blast cells and chromosomes and stem cell treatment. And the charity had this little video, Milo's Way. I went, oh, yeah, I can watch this. And I'll come in. And then I spoke to Chris Dugmore at the Essex Group. Excellent person, giving up a lot of time, helping everything. And she said to me, oh, Pete, you know, like, you know, here's a way of explaining this. This is how you can do it. So, of course, the first thing is give arm people with knowledge. Tell them you're not going to disappear overnight. And you can explain what is a very difficult diagnosis in a sensible way. The second thing I think was that you get out of your own head. So you basically think the things that I'm worried about haven't happened. The future is a concept. It's not there, but everything I've got right now, I still have. Yeah. And I don't want to ruin that by being upset and down and bringing people down. What I want to do is lift people up and try and go, we can do this. We can do this. We can do this. And we should do it. We should do it now. Yeah, we shouldn't wait. So I think what it does is, I mean, and this is what I would say, and I've spoken to so many people at the charity and so many people who are suffering with cancer, is you can use this as a platform to enable yourself to do things. It's not all bad. It certainly wouldn't, I wouldn't say, you know, like once you get over the disappointment, it's like, well, now I've got, why not visit my friend in Australia who I said I was going to do 12 years? Why don't I do that? So you can, you just basically say, well, actually, okay, I'm fortunate enough that I've been able to finish work and been able to do that. But that could be, you could, you know, I'm learning a language. I'm doing some, I have hobbies that I wanted to do that were basically outside of work and I wouldn't get around to them. So why not? Why don't I do them? So I think, I guess what I'm saying is you get support from your family and friends. You have to be mentally resilient to go and reframe everything to say, actually, why not now? And then you, to be quite honest, then you just, then it's just about execution. It's like Joe says, you kind of, you go out and you do it. You don't just think about, oh, wouldn't it be good? I should do that. You do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that is so wonderful. And I think that's something that anyone listening or watching this episode, embrace that. I think we should all embrace that and take every day almost as if we're not, it's going to be our last. Take every day and jump. Just jump, do exactly what you want. So don't live life thinking,
well, maybe not exactly what you want, Paul, but you know, no, I get your drift. I get your drift.
Yeah. It's been, I mean, even just for the podcast, how many people, the thought of us sitting and listening to the potential of hundreds of thousands of people can listen to this once it goes out. It's quite, for a lot of people, that's quite nerve wracking. But if this is the push that gives someone the thought that thinks, yes, I can do this, I'm going to make today count and see just what they can do and just see how they can go and how far they can go. I mean, I'm going to turn to Joe now. Now, from this, where I'm saying that impetus, that push, now, this is where you and I first connected when we talked about what it is you're doing to help raise awareness. Could you do a bit, could you share a bit more details about that for us and what made you do that? Because there's a few questions I want to ask after this.
Yeah, I'll bet. Yeah, absolutely. So on Saturday, I am going to be running or attempting to run an ultra marathon called the North Downs Way 100, which is a 100-mile run, which starts in Farnham in Surrey and ends in Ashford in Kent. So yeah, I mean, why did I sign up for it? Great question. I asked myself that a lot. You know, obviously I'd be lying if I said that, you know, a big part of it wasn't dad, right? So it would have been, I think I signed up at the end of December. And yeah, I met, like, partly dad, and I guess I'd also be lying if it wasn't a bit of Christmas indulgence that made me think I needed to probably shed a little bit of weight. So I started looking around at things, you know, big challenges that I could do. And again, like I said, I was inspired by dad. He just booked his round the world tour. He's doing all his Spanish lessons. He signed me up to get back on a motorbike so we can ride around in the Spanish mountains. So he kind of starts removing all these mental excuses that you think of, like, well, why not? Why can't I do this? So, you know, I started looking at ultra marathon events, and I found this run on the 5th of August for 100 miles. And I'm not really, I don't really like running, which is a bit strange. I'm not much of a runner. I mean, the only, and in the months leading up to signing up, the only run I was really doing was with my best friend who lives down the road. He just had a baby girl, and quite frankly, we knew he needed to lose a bit of weight. So we said, we're going for a run every Sunday and have a chat for about 40 minutes, which has been amazing, rewarding. He's done fantastic since. But I wasn't really prepared for it. So I thought, fine, sign up for 100 miles. I've got 7-8 months. I'll work the rest out. And what I didn't realize was that in order to do 100 miles, because no idiot would ever sign up for a 100-mile run, is that you actually need to qualify for it first. So when I was reading the fine print, they said, well, you know, before you do the 100-mile ultra marathon, you need to have run at least one 50-mile ultra marathon. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'd better sign up for one of them, which I did in May. And then in order to sign up for the 50-mile, again, there was some more fine print that said you need to run a marathon, which I'd not done. But I thought, well, that's only a marathon. That's nothing compared to what I've got to do for 100. So I signed up to that. in February. So yeah, this year has been a strange one, and like a rewarding one. I've lived through a lot of different emotions, from happiness to boredom to frustration, desperation, euphoria. And yeah, gradually I've knocked off each of those runs. So I completed the Goodwood Marathon on February 12th. 2 days after my 32nd birthday, I ran the 50-mile North Downs Way 50, and that set me up quite nicely for the 100-miler on Saturday. So, yeah, it's been an amazing journey so far.
It's absolutely wonderful. You are such an inspiration to people, Jo. You really are. And anyone that's listening to this, or if you're watching, if you haven't looked at the details that's around the messaging where you've just turned the podcast on and you're listening, go back to the details. It will have a link in it so you can actually do, you can add to the Just Giving page that Jo has for this to support it. There will be details about every one of my guests on this podcast. So make sure you reach out to them and follow their journey. And just go from that. So, but I will go back to this. It's just, I wanted to make sure that everyone knows, because whether you've come in from YouTube, whether you've come in from the podcast, whether you've seen a post on LinkedIn, it might be have come from Facebook or Threads or Twitter, or I should say X, because it's not Twitter anymore. And oh, then yeah. See, just go from there. Make sure you read all the details so you know just how you can support this wonderful, wonderful event. And I'm just going to come back to Debbie here as well. How can people help the charity? Because I know this is what Jo is doing to help raise awareness. And I know that Pete helps out with the charity, but what can other people do that would really help you?
Well, I think, you know, one of the biggest, one of the things that we want, that we aim to do at MDS UK is to empower our patients and members. So it's like what Pete was talking about before, you know, you're sort of the first thing you do when you get any kind of diagnosis or you suspect you might have something is go on Google. And, you know, we really don't want people to do that, but I've done it. You know, my husband, the reason why I'm doing the job that I'm doing at the moment is because my husband was diagnosed out of the blue, a bit like Pete. My husband had some kind of, well, I was doing a degree and I was at university and I was coming back. I brought back what I thought was fresh as flu, and I was pretty ill for a couple of days. Neil, it knocked him off his feet, and, you know, and I just said, oh, you know, typical man flu. And I was, you know, but he still had it 3 months later. He'd lost a lot of weight. He had a cough that he couldn't get rid of. He really, it was just before COVID, but he almost had all of the symptoms of COVID. But this was in the October before we all kind of knew about COVID. And by Christmas, he was really, really poorly, and he wouldn't go to the doctor. You know, I'm not going to say typical man, because, you know, we'd all say that, but he wouldn't go to the doctor. And eventually he just got so ill that he had to, and anyway, had to stay in hospital. His hemoglobin was really low, but he had some antibiotics and then he started feeling a lot better. So he had a bone marrow biopsy, but again, just like Pete, my husband thought, oh, I feel okay now, had antibiotics, you know, I'm fine, I'm okay, cough's gone, you know, no problem. And then we went to the consultant thinking the consultant was just going to give him a flea in his ear about having taken so long to, you know, to go and get checked out and get the antibiotics. And that was when the consultant kind of said to him, you've got myelodysplastic syndrome. In our case, funnily enough, we had heard of it because for such a rare disease, my mum had it as well, but she had it at a very low level. But they thought Neil's was at a higher level. And so, of course, Neil came out of that thinking he'd had a death sentence, basically. And then, you know, he just started putting his affairs in order. And I was the one that was going down rabbit holes on Google till 3 o'clock in the morning, reading conference papers from Scandinavia. I mean, honestly, you know, it was crazy. I thought I should have a PhD in MDS by the time, you know, we sort of, Neil started to get some treatment. And for me, I didn't, at that point, I came across the MDS UK website. I looked at that, like Pete, found out about the meetings, joined the next patient meeting. And it was amazing. It was like having a consultant, you know, one of the leading haematologists in the country, sitting at my kitchen table, you know. And I thought, and that was because in our case, Neil was diagnosed just before the pandemic. So I wasn't able to go. Now, I'm the control freak, but I wasn't allowed to go to any of his appointments, you know. But suddenly through MDS UK, we were able to access information from, you know, the, like I say, the UK's leading haematologists. So, you know, MDS UK does this amazing job. And what we are trying to do, like I say, is empower people so that patients who are diagnosed can get the information that they need so that they can ask the right questions and we can put them in front of people. But so going back to your question about what can people do? Well, obviously, you know, raising funds for us is just incredible, but also just understanding about the disease so that if they've got a friend or a loved one or a colleague or somebody that just, you know, has had something that they can't seem to shake off and, you know, and they've got this cough, you know, this persistent cough and, you know, they go grey instead of, I don't mean grey hair, but, you know, just like my husband was always quite swarthy looking and suddenly he was yellow, you know, you just kind of put our website in front of them and just say, you know, don't get scared, but just go, you know, just go and get it checked out and let your GP know about MDS and just say, is it worth just having a blood test just to see if I'm anemic or, you know. So it is really about raising awareness for us.
Can I just supplement that, Pearl? Because one of the things that I've picked up since I've been in the group is that exactly what Debbie said about fundraising. But it's one of the things about fundraising is it's people who have the disease have kind of limited ability. That it's hard for them to do marathons and to raise the money themselves. I mean, I'm lucky that Joe's stepped up. But what we also want is for people who've heard about it to also, who are not actually in, you know, who are actually suffering, actually getting involved as well. Because, I mean, we're not Imperial Cancer Research. It's a tiny, tiny. I mean, Debbie, do you want to say a little bit about how many people work for you? You know, like, or, you know, like, do you know what I mean? How many paid employees MDS UK have?
I mean, if you look at, I'm not going to name them, but one of the bigger cancer charities, not Cancer Research, not Old Macmillan, not the really, really big ones, but another one which is, I suppose, you know, comparable to us in how they try to sort of support people. They have about 400 members of staff. At the moment, we have four. So, and then we've got, you know, fantastic volunteers like Chris Dugmore. So we've got, you know, our trustees are very involved, very engaged, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, at the moment, we are a little bit short-staffed, to be honest, because we've got a couple of people that, one person on extended leave and a couple of people who are kind of part-time at the moment. So, you know, we are starting to recruit and, so, yeah, we are a little bit short-staffed. So we are trying to punch above our weight in terms of, you know, having a really good website and, you know, and we rely an awful lot on our volunteers. And that's the other way that people can get involved. You know, if you don't want to sort of run marathons or jump out of planes, I mean, which thank God for people like Joe that that are prepared to do that. I think you're insane, but you know, in the Northeast, we would say you need to get your bumps felt if you're going to be jumping into planes. But you know, so apart from that, I mean, if people were able to come and volunteer and, you know, act as ambassadors for us. And I know Chris has got her eye on Pete as an ambassador, because, you know, there are lots of things, even if you can't, you know, do anything physically, just being able to buddy up with other patients and tell your story and help to normalize things for them. Because those diagnoses, it hits you like a truck. And I know that it wasn't me, but it was my husband. And, you know, it's so, yeah, we need to empower, we need to inform people, but we also need ambassadors out there. You know, we need people to be going into supportive care centres and giving out leaflets and getting people to log on to the website and just helping out, maybe being on the other end of the phone and just giving a little bit of information to people. So if we can sign up some more volunteers as well as a result of the podcast, that would be phenomenal, honestly, because, you know, we're a great team, and because we're a small team, it's almost like a family. And, you know, we have people, like I say, like Chris and Claudia is another one of our patient coordinators who Claudia and Pete, when Pete mentioned about, you know, being on a meeting with people and seeing people still walking around and still, you know, living their lives, who've been having supportive care for MDS for 15 years. You know, that for me was a massive thing to be able to say to my husband, look, you think that you've got weeks to live. That's the way, you know, but look at this person's got the same thing you've got. And she's, you know, she's 15 years, she's been sort of still having the same supportive care. MDS, it just affects every single person in different ways. But, you know, it is difficult for them because of the type of treatments that they have to be able to get involved on a physical basis. But even so, you know, they're happy to sit on the other end of the phone. So if people can, you know, volunteer like that, that would be amazing.
Well, I'm going to put out an open invitation. You can all come back at any time you want. I would love to follow these stories and see if you want to come back. I will have you on this podcast as often as I can to shout from the rooftops about what you do. Oh, and I'll make sure that I will amplify every message to the nth degree so we get this global and people see how they can actually help you.
That's amazing. Thank you.
Jo, now I'm well aware you started telling us, see, we've not let you off the hook. We still want to know a bit more about this man, about this man. Now, you see, I can be the biggest geek on the planet. I mean, I'm sitting here, most people that know me, I'm Apple everything, and I've got my Apple Watch here, and I will check all the time, what's my heart rate? Have I done enough steps? Should I be standing up and everything? Now, because I'm a gadget girl, is there anything that you'd recommend with training or ways that if people can follow in your footsteps, not saying they can all do the 100 mile, but they might want to do a 5K or something, but how do we keep ourselves safe as well? Because we don't want people that aren't fit suddenly starting to do something if they don't know the signs, if they should stop.
Yeah, so don't do what I did. is the overarching message. So what I did was what anyone who thinks they can run 100 miles does is start running distances. And let me be clear, I got the help of an amazing personal trainer, Ollie McCarthy in Tunbridge Wells, who gave me a great program and great advice and was very clear, you know, do not, you know, if you start to feel a bit, you know, these are punchy goals. If we start to feel pain, don't push it. And what did I do? It completely ignored it. ran because if you think if you're going to run 100 miles, of course, you think I don't feel pain. What's pain? So I quickly put myself out of action with a very, very painful knee overuse injury where I couldn't walk in the lead up to my marathon. Yeah, I remember going to the physio and he said, yeah, we see loads of you each year. You all think you can run. You can't run. You all get injured. And he said, wait 3 weeks and you'll be fine. And I said, well, the problem is in 3 weeks I'm running a marathon. So that's not going to work. And then, you know, similar story again. I started running after the marathon, felt pain, thought ibuprofen would do the trick. Ran for 30K on that leg, tore my calf, had ankle ligament damage, didn't run before the 50 miler. Until I was walking, was I on your birthday on the 6th of May, Dad? Yes. And then
I wasn't walking.
And then I ran it. I just thought but something happened the weekend before where I was walking around, things were okay. So I thought I might as well turn up and try, ran it. And then, yeah, true to form, I thought it would be a good idea a few weeks ago on holiday to try surfing for the first time. I think I'm fairly sure I've broken my toe. I'm not the person to give advice, but what I can do, the advice I give to other people actually is what I gave to my best friend. And we, like I mentioned him earlier, so we run every Sunday. And he's a brilliant story. And what I told him is, and I think this has been great advice, and he's lost, since we started running in 2022, he's lost 15 kilos. He's doing his first half marathon this September in a few weeks. So that's a success story. And the principle we operated on, which was a sensible one, I think, is just do what you can to start running. So the first run we did, he was not in a good way. We ran for 5 minutes. It's terrible. I said, that's fine. Stop there. We'll come back again and we'll do it again next week and we'll just build up. And the rule we have is that unless you can do this every week, 52 weeks of the year, don't do it. It should feel easy. And I think that's the problem a lot of people make. If it's building habits, if it's trying to get into shape, is that we get caught out by these 12-week programs, or I'm going to get in shape and run this in 12 weeks. Well, great. Show me a picture of you in 17 weeks. Are you still doing it? So the principle I think that works, that I obviously didn't follow, let me be clear, is if you're going to try and do something, it's all about consistency and building those habits. You know, you can't be motivated every time. You have to be consistent. You have to build the habits. If something doesn't feel simple to you, like running every Sunday, and you couldn't happily do that for 52 weeks of the year, don't do it. Do that and then do it every single week. And then just build up from there. And then when that feels easy, maybe 10 minutes is where you move to. So that is the advice in theory, which I would say to people. But sometimes when you've got to run 100 miles, yeah, you've got to push it a bit.
And this is going to be probably left field. It's just something that's come to me. So I apologize. It's just coming out of the blue. If you're running, have you got any favorite songs or anything, if you're saying to people, because I know what I listen to when I'm on the treadmill. So is there any favorite songs or soundtracks you'd recommend, say this is the best beat to run to?
You know what, it's so a lot of the long runs, it really is like I said, I don't really like running, but what I love about it now is it's one big mind game. You're basically playing with yourself. But you know, if you're out for 3 hours, you're out running for 5 hours, 10 hours, but we've all been on a treadmill for half an hour and said, I am so bored right now. I'm so bored, or this hurts so much. And I think, and ultimately you question yourself, like, why am I doing this? Like, for me, I don't need to run. I've got a car. I don't need to run 100 miles. No one needs to run 100 miles. But I think it's the quality of thoughts that it provokes in you, yeah, to force you to do something like that. And I think that, for me, that's one part of running, is you're always answering when you're 3 hours in and everything hurts, like, what, and you know you've got another 7 hours to go, what quality of thought have you got, and what questions are you asking yourself that's going to bring something more out of you mentally? Because that's the difference. It's not going to be physical, it's going to be mental. What's going to bring something out of you that's going to dominate that pain that you're feeling physically? And sometimes it's just listening to a good Ed Sheeran song. You know, that's the thing. It's it's anything that sometimes it's just the old songs. For me, it would be, you know, for Dad, I guarantee it would be something from, you know, the 1980s when he back in his clubbing days, or just take him back. He'll cruise off. And suddenly you could be having the best time of your life. It'll be something like that. It'll be a really corny song and just something that will just take your mind away and get you to focus. So
there's nothing wrong with that, Pete.
Actually, I think that you're missing a bit of a story here, Joe, because we took a city break. Only Joe can do this. We went for a city break in Milan a little while ago. Was it like 2-3 weeks ago? And yeah, Joe says, I've got my last big training run to run, Dad. We're in thing. And we're going to Lake Como. And Joe says, well, maybe I can run from Lake Como to Bellagio and meet you there. So it's 35 degrees. I don't know how much elevation there is. So Joe sets off running, running. And then when we get to the, like, when we were at Bellagio, Joe goes, oh, be careful of these stones when he jumps into the sea, you know, like afterwards. But he, I said to him, how are you going? And he goes, I have to listen to the most boring songs ever because I can't let my heart rate go over 140 because I've got to keep going steadily all this time because I can't afford to get too excited and burn out. It just made me laugh. So what was the boring music you were listening to there, Joe?
Oh, I think it's because it's hot. It just takes, obviously, I obviously bit off more than I could chew on that one. So I was out, ended up being out for about 5.5 hours in that heat. But the, yeah, one of the things is, it's the thing with ultra running, as I've learned, because I don't really know anything about it until recently, is you go slow to go far is basically the lesson. And the way to think of that is, you know, if I asked you to sprint as far as you can, how far would you get versus if I told you to walk? And that's the game you're playing effectively. So rather than running at that faster pace, you're really just trying to keep your heart rate ticking over a lower rate. Now, in the heat, I was struggling because it was so much hotter, my heart was beating faster. So I thought, what I'll do is I'll find the most chilled out playlist. I stumbled on this Lazy Sunday playlist that I was listening to for about 3 hours just to try and calm like everything down. It didn't really work, but...
lots of Lionel Richie, and couldn't imagine, I don't know why Lazy Sunday says Lionel Richie to me.
It is a great playlist. It is, like, there's some bangers in there, you know, but when you've listened to it on repeat for a while, less so.
Yeah. I mean, I'll listen to Audible quite often because I don't do the 100 miles, but I will walk a good 10, 15 miles a day. So I do that.
Amazing.
But I've got female knees that have worn stilettos for years, so they're completely buggered, basically. So I can't do much else. But I'll listen to the Audible. But like you say, that what I used to do on the treadmill and I put on repeat was Sandstorm. Sandstorm was my thing with that beat, and it would keep me going. But there's no way I could do many miles at that pace. No way at all.
That's fairly up tempo. You must have been clocking up some miles to Sandstorm.
At times, I used to do it. I do it on repeat for about 3 or 4 times, but then I did do my ankle in at the same time. So I learned my lesson.
That's brilliant.
Now, going back, we've covered so many different things. I'm going to go to each one of you and see if there's one last piece, one pearls of wisdom, one nugget that you'd like to leave the listener, the viewer with just for this time. But I have already asked you all, if you're free, I would love you to come back and carry on, because yes, Joe's going to do his run this weekend, but we can do lots of other things that we can look to build more into, and we'd like to see how you've got on. So I'm going to do ladies first. I'm going to ask Debbie first. Is there a golden nugget or a pearls of wisdom that you would like to share with the listeners?
Gosh, that's putting me on the spot. But I would say, don't lose hope, I suppose, is what I would always say, because I think, just going back to, you know, when my husband was diagnosed, it was partly the way his diagnosis was delivered to him. But I just, you know, Pete touched on this earlier, that you just suddenly think, well, I don't know what's happened to me. And, you know, this, they used words like it's an incurable disease and, you know, things like that. But, you know, we have got, through MDS UK and sort of people that we're partnering up with, some incredible clinical trials that are going on at the moment. There are drugs that we're looking to be repurposed from sort of being treating things like leukemia that are getting really good results. So just, you know, don't lose hope. Never, ever lose hope, because there are lots of people out there that are, you know, doing research. And so whatever things are telling you at the moment, you know, tomorrow's another day. So
that's wonderful. Brilliant. Thank you. Going to come to you now, Pete. What's your golden nugget?
He's a bit gutted that you already gave up the Confucius quote, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel that in the edit, Pearl can clear it up, because obviously I can't just read it out. But I think, you know, it's be grateful for the time that you've got now. It's like, I know it's a cliche to say live in the moment, but spending a lot of time thinking about why things have gone wrong is not a great use of your time, nor is it spending too much time in the future. So staying in the moment, I think, would probably be it. And then obviously, if you can work Confucius in there, you know, like that would be.
Well, I was going to say
everyone has two lives, and they realize they only have one.
Yeah,
you should get that one in there, Paul.
Will do. Joe, now we've talked about, and we've talked about your Just Giving page, and we're going to make sure that we've got all those links. But can you, do you know it off by heart? Do you know the URL for the Just Giving page, or is it something, because I can just add it into the show notes?
Yeah, I think I add it into the show notes. I think it's Just Giving, like joe-thomas-ndw, which is North Downs Way 100.
Wonderful. I can say, if people want to go to our website, so the MDS UK or MDS patient support website, we've got links to Joe. Joe is our massive hero at the moment. Everybody's talking about Joe, all four of us.
there's
lots of us talking about Joe. We're very excited about what's happening at the weekend. So yeah, there's links all over our website, all over our social media. So yeah,
that's wonderful. And I will make sure those links are there. So Joe, do you have a golden nugget or a pearls of wisdom to share?
Yeah, I would. And I guess this is, I think we slightly covered this earlier, and it's really only come up since I've started promoting the run and putting stuff out there, which is, you know, to be honest, not something that I really was thinking about a lot or knew like how to do especially well, but really just to put yourself out there. And I guess in the context of the year, set enormous targets and don't lose hope and just keep plugging away, because you never realize that if you put that target there, like, you might get there, you might not, but it's going to put you on a different path to a different trajectory than you would otherwise go. And I think for me, just in the past couple of weeks, I've been really overwhelmed with the support you've got. And I think some of the hearing your story today, it's been a similar experience as well, with other people talking about, people having diagnoses from blood cancers, and it gets other people talking. And this is something that, to be honest, I didn't even really think about when I wanted to do this. But I couldn't be happier that I've decided to do it. And it's brought a conversation out that I didn't realize was going to happen. And I've been able to connect with amazing people like you, Pearl, Debbie. And it's just been it's been an amazing experience in a way that I really didn't appreciate that I was going to have. That's fantastic.
Everything happens for a reason. And one of my favourite words is synchronicities. And anyone that listens to this podcast will hear, I normally mention it in at least one of my episodes that go out all the time. But it just leaves me to say a massive, massive thank you to each and every one of you. I can't wait to get you back to share what happens after you've done the run, Joe, and ways that we can help with the charity again. And to anyone listening, please make sure, I'm going to say again, look at all the show notes, make sure you follow those links wherever you found the podcast or the videos. Just go and make sure you give as much as you possibly can. Everyone, just a little bit, but every time we give, it's going to help so many people. So thank you so much for listening, and thank you each and every one of you for taking part.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much, Paul.
Thanks for having us. And Joe, you know, you're a hero. What can I say? You're making a lot of middle-aged women very happy at the moment. So that's just a byproduct of.
Like I said, it's helping me in ways I'd never really.
Well, there you go.
Back to the list.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Pearls of Wisdom podcast. We hope you have enjoyed the content shared. Please share with others who would like to enjoy these interviews and discussions. If you would like to support the podcast, please follow the link in the episode description. If you want to be a guest on the show, reach out and let's discuss next steps. Until the next time, enjoy your listening.